Hello, this is Chris Nelson from evolveconsciousness.org. I'll be presenting some information regarding the Ka, Ma'at, and Karma from Ka Ma'at, Ka Ma'a, which I've already talked about in the previous presentation on the Egyptian Ka and related symbolism to the alphabet and the Ankh and the bull. So this will deal with Ka, Ma'at, Karma, and the Wheel of Life, and also the scales of justice. So there'll be some information I've previously talked about, but more specifically relating, setting up what karma is and how it relates to ka ma'at, ka and the ma'at, as opposed to a longer presentation that just has it briefly included within it. So this one will be its own presentation. Image one, ma'at, or with a small m, ma'at, is a goddess, as Ma'at with a capital M, or just as a concept, as a universal concept, which is what Ma'at is. It's just with a small m. And in computer transliteration, it's M3 apostrophe T, and that's Ma'at. The concept of Ma'at is underlying. It's one of two large overarching conceptual ideas from the ancient Egyptians. The other would be Heka, which was also personified as a god, but Heka is the activation of your ka and the employment of your ka, and Heka is the source for Magia and Magi and magic. Heka is the magical component. Not only does it relate to hands, arms, and actions, it also relates to the word and the voice and the aspect of divine utterance, the hue, which is relates to Shu, the god Shu, relates to the god Hue, which is supposed to be correlated with the logos or the word. And this is the right speech, true speech. Ma'a Keru is true of speech, and that was an important part of Egyptian life. And the thing in Heka and the aspect of magic and speaking things into existence, that was the creative act of the logos and the word. That's why speech was an important part of living in Ma'at, to be true of speech, not only true in action, but they focused a lot on true of speech. I relate it to sophistry and things like that, where you can be true of speech and have good rhetoric to convince people of things, but your actions might not be reflective of the objective truth and objective morality. But you use words to convince people of something. And originally it was supposed to be that the words are true and everything, but I can see a manipulative aspect to a dominator culture and civilization and social control and authority. But back to Ma'at is the concept of truth, justice, law, integrity, uprightness, correctness, righteousness, steadfast, unalterable, reality, order, stability, continuity, equilibrium, balance, measurement, and reciprocity. And there's other words as well that would equate and have similar conceptual correspondences. The Ma'a itself, because you have Ma'at, and then Ma'a is an underlying, more basic. So Ma'a is a concept of right, true, real, genuine, upright, righteous, just, and authentic. Ma'at is truth, and Ma'a is true. So you can be living according to the principles of Ma'at and being Ma'a, you're being right, being true, being real, being genuine, being upright, being righteous, being just, being authentic. By living according to the principles of truth, law, justice, integrity, uprightness, correctness, righteousness. So you live according to foundations of righteousness, and then you live righteously. You are righteous yourself. You live according to the foundations of truth, and then you live true yourself. So you live according to Ma'at to be Ma'a. This relates to the concepts of morality, karma, kama, kama'a, dharma, artha, rota, the Tao, Dao, weird, word. That's the Druidic or Celtic, somewhere around there. Moira, Greek, Mi, Sumerian, and Asha, Zoroastrian. The personified names of Ma'at as a goddess are Ma. So you have the great goddess Ma, which is a counterpart. It's a reference to the Phrygian goddess Kybele, Cybele. That one's called Ma'a, which relates to Ma'at, and there's Ma'et, and then there's Ma'at, Ma'ut, Amas, Ma'at, Ma'it, Ma'yet, and Mut. And the goddess Mut is a great mother goddess. And in the creation myths, I'll only briefly mention that Ma'at is important as the first daughter, and it kind of represents this two parts. One part is life and one part is order and law and truth and justice. And that's what Ma'at represents, is that part of creation. It's actually the foundation. It represents a foundation for creation as the stabilizing factor that creation emerges from the chaos of the primeval waters. In order for creation to be possible, there's the concept of Ma'at, which is why it's a foundational concept in all of the creation myths. Even if it's not personified as a goddess in all of the creation myths, it's specifically personified in Ra and also in Atum through Tefnut, which is Ma'at, and Shu, twin brother, which is life, and relates to the divine word and utterance and logos. Also, there's the Greek goddesses Metis, Dike, and Themis, which derive from Ma'at. Metis, I think, was wisdom, and Dike and Themis more had to do with law and justice, but they derive from Ma'at. So Ma'at was wearing a feather. The feather represented truth. There was also the mound. I mentioned this in the previous presentation, where it's going to come up. The mound as the foundation for other gods to stand upon, for creation to stand upon and exist, apart from the nothingness of the primordial chaos. So Ma'at is represented in the hieroglyphs, which I have here from Budge. You can see there's the mound with the scimitar or scythe, as well as the feather, used interchangeably in different ways to represent Ma'at or Ma'a and the concepts around it. Ma'at is represented as wings, as is Isis and other goddesses, because as I mentioned before, the air, sky, sun symbolism, the bird symbolism, it relates to mother goddess symbolism, and transformation of the sun through that mother goddess in the air and the birds, and the power of resurrection through the vulture, the death side of the bird symbolism compared to the light side of the symbolism of the bird mother goddess. But the resurrection aspect isn't there because that's the genetrix and rebirth, resurrection, the womb. It's all part of that feminine symbolism, which is part of the bird in the air, relating to the sun, resurrection and rebirth. Ma'at doesn't hold the Was scepter of power and dominion, because that's what the males hold. She holds another scepter which has similar symbolism, but she does hold the Ankh, and she's the youngest personified goddess. In some references as the daughter of Ra, but also the mother, so she plays that dual aspect of the mother and daughter, and self-created creator, created from the mother, but also creates her as the daughter, and you have that in the Osiris, Isis, and Horus. and other metaphors where the creator has his wife as his spouse, but it's also sort of his mother and also kind of his daughter. Michael Tsarion talks about that a bit. Anyways, I won't be getting too much into it. At the bottom, you have the determinative for Ma'at, which is Ma'at with the Ankh on her knees, and the Feather of Truth. So whenever you see that, it's a determinative to do for the previous hieroglyphics that it relates to Ma'at, what is being talked about. So that's the end of that image, number two. This is just to show you the source of the foundation. So you have the plinth, which is like a mound. That's the shape, and it's Ma'a. And it equals to Ma'a as the scythe with the arm underneath. So that's Ma'a. And it's the same words, determinative or ideogram. It's used as a determinative or ideogram, meaning true, right, truth, integrity, essentially Ma'at itself or Ma'a itself, just by using that plinth. So the plinth itself is a symbol for Ma'at, along with the feather and the ideogram, which I showed in the previous image. So here we have the sickle, sorry, not a scythe, but a sickle, and that's just Ma, but it's used in the representations of Ma'at. And you have Nefer Ma'at, that's with perfect justice, and it has the mound with the sickle, and then a T underneath, and then you have the ideogram, the hieroglyph for Nefer, which means good or perfect or beautiful. So Nefer Ma'at is with perfect justice, or perfect of Ma'at, or Ma'at is good, or Ma'at is beautiful. And it's often used as an epithet of the sun, Thoth or Khnum, which is an aspect of the sun. So the sun, and resurrection, and the light of truth, the light of Ma'at, is the sun. An epithet of the sun is being perfect of Ma'at, perfect in truth, perfect in law, perfect in justice, which is why the sun symbolism and the bird symbolism, the feminine symbolism, the mother goddess symbolism, the cow goddess, the Milky Way, night sky goddess of Nut, all the symbolism relates to the sun and the journey required to be taken through the underworld, through the darkness, in order to be resurrected, reborn anew, reconstituted anew, and rebirthed into a new world, into a new life. So at the bottom I have two cow goddesses and the solar barge making its way across that dark solar goddess aspect in order to be rebirthed from the solar goddess, from the mother goddess. And you have the mound that they're standing upon. Again, on the right side, you have Nekbet, I forget. But they're on the mound, the wavy watered mound, the foundational mound within the primeval waters. And the cow's on that, and then the cow has the sun between its horns, the horns reaching up to the skies as the rays emanating of the sun. And on top of the head of the consciousness, or the sun consciousness. It all has to do with resurrection and rebirth, and remaking ourselves better and better, transformation, purification, betterment, the sun burning away the impurities and refining us as the phoenix, the fire bird, burns into ashes and then is reborn, reconstitutes itself from its ashes, just as we can deconstruct and reconstitute ourselves. And we have Osiris, or Horus as Osiris in the Hall of Judgment, or Osiris as Osiris in the Hall of Judgment. And they're on the mound, as you can see the mound, with the angle specifically of Ma'at as the plinth, because you have other mounds which are just pretty rectangular. And then you have some mounds which have the angular forward part directly representing the plinth of Ma'at. So Osiris, the Lord, the host of heaven, the Lord of the dead, the Lord of life, the Lord of eternity, to get that new world, new life, you pass, the Osiris has to grant you, after you've weighed up and measured up to truth, law, justice, etc. And Osiris himself stands on the foundation of Ma'at, of truth, law, order, justice of the universe and cosmos. So he's what allows eternity to happen. It's all sun symbolism. Even have Horus there and sun in some symbolism instead of Osiris, because they do have similar aspects in the creation myths where they're murdered and then they go to the underworld, or that's where they end up being, or they get reconstituted there, rebuilt there. You know, you even have the Osiris into the 14 pieces, hacked up into 14 pieces, rebuilt. You have Horus with the missing eye, and Set helps him get the eye back, so he reconstitutes himself. There's always the reconstitution, reformulation, rebirth into a new life, a new world. That's the immortality, the eternity, the eternal life, the afterlife, because it's after your previous life. You get a new life, a new world. And that's the whole alchemical self-transformative journey. So image number 3. Here's just a recap of the Ka, which I've done previously, but since I'm talking about Kama, Art, and Karma, I figured I would have to put it in to make it a part of its own presentation. So the Ka is the power, energy, spirit of life, and life, it's the spirit, essence, and nature of life from the power of our hands and arms as actions and deeds. So from our hands and arms as Ka, again, like the horns and consciousness and reaching up to the air, the sky, the sun. This is the power we have, the energy, the spirit, essence, and nature of our life to create our lives. So it's Ka and Kao is the bull and the cow. If you want more information, you can look at the previous presentation on Egyptian Ka, alphabet, bull, and the Ankh symbolism. It represents power and strength and fertility through the bull and cow symbolism, which has been used in many cultures. The power of action in the world to create from consciousness the self, the soul, the spirit, the essence, etc., of who we are. Because that is who we are, is represented by our expressions of consciousness through our words and through our actions that speak louder than words. You shall know them by their actions, judge them by the fruit of their actions. Actions speak louder than words. So consciousness, self, soul, spirit, essence, etc., it all represents who we currently are. We are aspiring and rising up to higher consciousness. That's what we're supposed to do. And if we don't, well, then our level of consciousness and our actions will represent our lack of aspiration to higher consciousness and will reflect our current level of consciousness, which will not be higher, but will be a lower consciousness. Real spirituality is morality. Your spirit, soul, self, and character is defined by what you do with what you know about reality and self-consciousness. Your behavior reflecting who you are. The upright arms and at a right angle. Again, uprightness, righteousness, which is in the definition of Ma'at, which is what the purpose of Ka is supposed to be, which is why the Pharaoh had the most Ka, which is why the gods had the most powerful Ka, because Ma'at was the underlying structural aspect of all of the universe in the human world and in the netherworld or the higher realm, the underworld, or the eternal world, wherever the different places the gods were. Well, Ma'at was there as well as an underlying foundational principle of creation to exist. And the gods were upholding Ma'at the most through their Ka. They had the most powerful Ka. The Ka is all about living in Ma'at through your actions and deeds, living in Ma'at so that you can be Ma'at. The upright arms, the right angle, the power and energy to act with arms and hands being upright in righteousness. Our moral spirit, essence, and nature determines our quality of life, our character, behavior, actions, and deeds. And that's character. Our character is character, and charisma is charisma. And charisma, now the charisma you have, it gives you a veil of authority and influence over people, so it's a form of power. And you can, of course, have a character that's false, a sociopath, or a false charisma and know how to manipulate people, sure. But it has to do with an aspect of power and influence and authority in life and an energy about you and the spirit that you portray through your consciousness expressions. And so the Ka is determines who we are by our actions and deeds. It determines our quality of life. Because that's what we do. What we do, based on our consciousness and how we act in Ma'at or against Ma'at, that determines what happens in our life and the quality of our life. It's living according to natural moral law, which will get you good things, or living against natural moral law, which will get you bad things. So if you live according to Ma'at, you keep living within the order of the universe conceptually, and you'll have less bad things. Not that no bad things will happen, but you won't be creating them for yourself, essentially. Of course, other people can do bad things, and you don't have much control, but you can create a good influence of other people towards you and create good conditions for yourself by not doing evil, by doing ma'at, by being ma'a. Otherwise, you end up in the isfah, which is isfet is chaos and also evil. And when you have the abomination of the ka, when you don't use your ka properly, well, that's called evil as well. So they all relate. Ka and ma'at are inextricably linked once you understand it. Image number 4. This one deals with the Hall of Judgment and the Scales of Ma'at. The Hall of Ma'ati and the Scales. You can see the infographic. It represents, at the top left, I have a representation of the double Ma'at, of Ma'ati, where there's two Ma'ats or two feathers on one Ma'at. So you can see on the top left, there's a Ma'at with the arms as the Ka, and she has the two feathers, so the dual feathers on her head, the dual arms. There's the dual aspect of either the dual knowledge of right and wrong, good and evil, the knowledge of good and evil, or the dual first and last of truth and justice, representing Ma'at through the one and the seven, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. And there's also Anubis, recording, in charge of the proceedings of the weighing. And there's the Amut or Amit monster who will eat your heart if you fail to weigh up. So if your heart weighs too low, it's too heavy, the burden of evil and falsity in your life is too heavy for the lightness of truth, well, your heart goes down towards the floor, which is where the Amut monster is. And it's not about you're getting annihilated, where you don't even have an afterlife to be reincarnated or whatever beliefs. It's not even that. It's if you get eaten and you fail to live up to it, then you're annihilated. So the fear of being annihilated from existence will get you to live up to your king's rule, and your kings and the priestly controllers desire to have you live in their dictates of morality, even if they're not moral themselves. You got to do it, or else you end up being annihilated from existence. The pharaoh doesn't have to worry. The pharaoh is already granted access to the afterlife anyways. So he can be as immoral as he wants. The Amut monster eats. It's symbolic. So that's the false exoteric interpretation that's pervaded all across the Egyptian lore. But the real esoteric wisdom is about how you need to put to death every time you fail to live up to Ma'at, every time you fail to live up to the feather of truth, justice, law, and order. Well, that means you're weighed down by evil, by falsity, by injustice, and such. And when you do that, well, what do you need to do in order to evolve? You need to put to death the shadow, darkness, demon, falsity, immorality, wrong, and evil within you, so that you can evolve and possibly reach that eternal way of living in a better way of life, in an afterlife. But it's all about here and now, creating a heaven on earth, a paradise on earth, an eternal paradise on earth. So you live up and you graduate successfully over and over in your life to new and new levels of awakening, evolving consciousness, or you fail and you realize it, and then you eat the evil and darkness within you, and you destroy it so that you can reconstitute yourself even better. This is all about alchemy. It's all alchemy. I haven't heard anyone. I've looked and looked and looked, and no researcher, no one has ever explain the Hall of Judgment as I have just done. Because this is what the symbolism actually means. This is why alchemy comes from Egypt. And Kemet, the land of the people and the family and life, and fertile land, that's what Kemet means. So yes, you have Kem, black, but Kemet, there's other words with Kem, K-M in them, that don't mean, they have nothing to do with black. Kemet doesn't have to do with black. You look at the word, there's no determinative for black. There's an article written by Imhotep, someone, whatever, really in-depth into Egyptian understandings, and he broke it down, and I can see how it doesn't really represent anything to do with blackness. It has to do with life and fertility and the people and the family, a land where you can have family, a land where you can have people living together, a land where you can have prosperity and fertility because the land is habitable, because you can plant there. Because there's another ideogram instead of Kemet with the cross X for town and place. There's another one for land. It's just a line. That means land, but it doesn't mean hospitable land, which is the whole purpose for Kem, and it's the fertile land and land of life. And anyways, scale is M-Kat. So you have Mat, except a K-H or H with a tilde under it or above it in the hieroglyphs. So I was talking about the two Mats, the Hall of Two Truths or Double Truths, the Hall of Ma'ati or Double Ma'at, the Hall of Judgment or of the Double Ma'at, dual, two judgments, the good and evil. I'm talking about two judgments, knowledge of good and the knowledge of evil, so that you can judge properly. Judgment of righteousness, so the knowledge of good and evil, so you can live righteously, and judge what is right and wrong. So there's the ideogram for the scale, and it has the feather with the heart hanging, even though you have the heart in its own position in the scale. That's the ideogram for scale, which directly relates to Ma'at. So this all happens in the Duat, the Hall of Two Truths, the Hall of Ma'ati, the Hall of Double Ma'at, the Hall of Judgment happens in the Duat, and that's the underworld. It's the realm of the dead. It's represented by the hieroglyph of the star, but with a circle around it. So it has to do with the five elements and the quintessence. I guess I'll just mention it now. So in all my work on the four elements and the fifth element being the consciousness, the self, the soul, and our ability to recreate ourselves according to the elemental quaternity, quartering, squaring of the circle process, where we go from our, in the four element part, instead of the trinity of consciousness of our thoughts, elements, and actions, in the quaternity, the quartering, squaring the circle, aspect of creating our reality, we have our desires and cares, to our thoughts, to our, the change of our actions and deeds, and then that results in consequences in our reality that affects everyone and ourselves. And this is all done with our consciousness, our self, our soul, as we spin the wheel and make things turn. This is seen, I have an infographic from my previous presentation, if you're not familiar with that aspect of reality and consciousness symbolism that I've done. So the fifth element, as I've talked about in other presentations, is that consciousness, self, soul aspect of who we are and how we can remake ourselves. And here we have the Duat, which has the Hall of Two Truths in the underworld, the hero monomyth going through the dark underworld to conquer the demons and remake themselves into a new version and reemerge into the world anew. Well, that's exactly what the Hall of Two Truths is. That's what this alchemical process we're talking about is, judging ourselves and judging from right from wrong, to live more righteously, to live more according to the principles of Ma'at and morality. That's what it's all about. And here we have the Duat, this place where all of this happens, the Hall of Judgment, the underworld, the hero monomyth, remaking ourselves, conquering our demons, which is what happens in the whole Hall of Two Truths as well. Is there's a 12 gates, sometimes there's 15. So 12, again, solar symbolism. It's all about resurrection and rebirth. So there's the 12 demons, or 9 or 15. There's different ones in different stories. And you got to conquer those demons, representing aspects of falsity, either within ourselves or in the world. And then you get to reach the final judgment. And then you weigh yourself. And if you're still failing, well, then you put to death the evil, and you keep coming back and keep judging yourself and keep trying to improve yourself so that you can finally reach the position of consciousness where you and others can create that heaven on earth, that paradise on earth. That's what we're working towards. So we got the five-pointed star, the circle around. That's the Duat, the realm of the dead. The SB, the star itself is Seba, or the Dua. So you can see how Duat and Dua, Dua and Duol, Duol and Duat, the T and the L. So Duol, Duat. The T can become a D, the D to an L, the Duat to Duad, to Duol. So Duol, you're in the Hall of Two Truths, the Duol from the Duat, the realm of the dead. And you have Sabaya, Sabayat, which is teachings or instructions, which means the wisdom and the way of living truly. So these Sabayat, there's some for Ptah teachings, wisdom teachings of Ptah. There's many Sabayat teachings and instructions of wisdom, the way of living truly. So that's what the star represents in terms of many words. They use the star, and has to do with light and the stars and the twinkling of the lights, and the opening of knowledge and the closing of knowledge, because the twinkling is a closing and an opening, and the Seba is a closing. I forget. I was reading Bantu languages and Ziba and Zibua, and how they are opening and closing and relating to twilight. Anyways, I'm mixing that in here, but the star has to do with light, and the light and the truth and enlightenment. And so learning and teaching and instruction is a giving, and then there's the receiving part. So when you're learning and receiving, you're teaching, you're giving. So it's Sabayat is teachings and instructions, wisdoms of way of living truly. So you teach that to others, which is what the wisdom teachings are about, ways of living truly. It has to do with the light, and that's why the star is used, because it has to do with light and enlightenment. And gaining wisdom, gaining truth, higher consciousness. And the Duat, you can see it uses that symbol. Again, the Duat, the Hall of the Two Truths, and the judgment of righteousness, and the scales. All has to do with alchemy and self-renewal, remaking ourselves into wiser people through learning and teachings. So it's all related, all the symbolism is related, from the Seba to the Duat symbol to the Hall of Two Truths in the Duat of remaking ourselves. This is what's the important alchemical knowledge. And it all comes from Egypt. This is the source of alchemical self-renewal, is right here in the Hall of Two Truths, double truths, Ma'ati, the double Ma'at, the judgment of good and evil, the dual two judgments, righteousness. It all comes from here. There is no other source symbolism that has this at an earlier time. This is from at least 2000 BC to 2500, and probably before that to the 3000s to 4000 BC, that this pictographic symbolism is describing, and probably the ancient wisdom probably comes back 10 to 15,000 years ago from a pre-Ice Age civilization, which we do have actual physical evidence in terms of the pyramids. Well, the pyramids might be more recent. I still think they go back to possibly the Sphinx time, which the Sphinx is previous to the Ice Age. You also have, why I put the pyramids back to that age as well, is because you have the pyramids in China, Bosnia. I forget if it's Bosnia. You got pyramids all over the place, all over the world. They are now mountains because it's been so long, they're overcovered in earth and trees. But they're pyramids. And I think, not a truth, but that it comes from a previous civilization, pre-flood, pre-ice age. And that's why I say the Egyptian pyramids also come from that time. And the Sphinx has more evidence that it comes from that time. So all this is speculative, but anyways. So this knowledge comes from that time, and then over time people develop narratives of the ancient wisdom, and then they create stories and narratives to describe that wisdom, and they veil it in exoteric layers to make it more confusing, because, as I say, well, either you're a light worker trying to hide the knowledge so that the evil people won't use it. But what evil people? If you're in your own society, in your own civilization, which was called Egypt, you wouldn't have a need to hide it, because you'd be trying to get everyone to live better. So clearly they weren't light occultists. If they were light occultists, they'd be hiding it from who? From the dark occultists of, I guess, the Pharaoh or whoever else that was more powerful than the priest scribes that created these wisdom traditions and veiled them in exoterics. So either they were hiding them from someone more powerful than them, or from their peers, I guess. I don't know, that makes less sense to me. The way I see it is they all understood this, and they all taught exoterically a bullshit story to keep people away from the true knowledge. Meanwhile, well, they already knew the knowledge, so they could decode the symbolism of what it actually represented in real life, in the life here and now. Whereas everyone else knew the exoteric story, which was about life after your life here and now, and all about how your life here and now should be lived in an effort to attain life afterwards, so you don't get eaten by the Amit monster and get annihilated into extinction. So the whole scales, the Duat, the underworld, the Hall of Two Truths is about correctness, exactitude, and the weighing and balance through the measurement of behavior, actions, and deeds to aspire towards being Ma'a, a truer, realer, higher self and life through Ma'at, truth, justice, law, order, righteousness, uprightness, equilibrium, balance, etc. So you have yourself as the heart, which was consciousness, representative of your deeds. Well, that's what I'm getting into the next slide anyways. So image five, I've already talked about in the previous presentation. So just quickly, we have the scale of justice. You have the heart, which is your desires and cares, your inclinations, actions and deeds on one side. And if it weighs too heavy compared to the right side of the feather of truth, which is light, and also representative of light and the stars and the sun, if you weigh down too much, it determines the essence of our ka and our spirit. The desires, cares, inclinations, actions and deeds determines the essence of our ka and our spirit, our character, our essence, etc. So if evil weighs down our spirit, our ka actions, the spirit in which we do things of good or evil, is weighed down. So the scale goes down, the feather goes up, so we go down to the ground where the Amit monster can devour our heart and send us into annihilation, extermination. But it's actually about, if you're weighed down, then you got to allow the monster, the Amit, which is actually a cleansing monster, it's a purification eater, to eat the corrupted, dark, evil, immoral, shadow demon darkness, desires, cares, actions and deeds, so that you don't do them again, so you can remake yourself better. So we have a ka of life and good, or a ka of death and evil, all by the accumulations of our deeds and actions, what we do in life. We're in the dead mind and heart in the lower earth consciousness, or living as mind and heart in higher air consciousness, and that's our karma, our kama, our ka-ma'at, the mat of our ka-spirit. That's what karma is. Is what we do in accordance with ma'at, or dharma, or rota. And that's our karma. So future rewards or consequences based on our past actions, truth or consequence. And that's true balance. To bring us in balance with truth, the feather of truth of ma'at. One drop of evil weighs down our existence with dire results. So the goal is freedom from evil and negative results we create in the elemental quartering creation of reality process we go through. It's not about a false balance of accommodating evil. It's not about balancing between good and evil. That's not what the scale is about. A lot of people are confused about that, especially pseudo-spiritualists and New Agers. Alright, image number 6. Here's just polar aspirations. In choosing Maat, we seek one or follow both blindly. Do we seek and choose Isfet, or do we seek and choose Maat? Isfet as chaos and evil, and Maat as truth and order. We have harmony and unity, alignment and embodiment, consciously one way, so either we choose to be good, and we're striving towards that and letting go of the other polarity, or we're choosing to be evil and letting go of the good polarity. Either we're choosing one way, consciously choosing one way, harmonizing, uniting, aligning, and embodying one way, one polarity or the other, or if we're not actively doing that, consciously choosing one way, then we're actually living on the dual checkerboard floor of doing unconsciously dual living. We're living in both good and evil. We're living in both Ma'at and Isfet. We're living in both truth and falsity. We're living in both chaos and order, because we're not choosing one polarity over the other. Because we're remaining ignorant of the knowledge of good and evil. So we can't know that we're actually doing evil. So we're going to be walking both the path of good and evil, still doing evil, because we don't have the knowledge that we are actually doing evil. So we have, it's the key to polar aspirations, not being stuck in the dual aspirations, or the ignorance of unconsciously walking in the dual aspirations. You have to become aware and consciously choose one or the other. And Ma'at is the ideal, the universal, therefore the quote absolute, which is why the quote God conception is viewed as the ideal, the universal. It's because it's from the idea of our consciousness. The consciousness is the generator, creator, the God of our existence, of our ability to live in existence and create and generate in reality. And this is, we envision the truth and morality, truth level 2, the ideals from the idea of our imaginations. And these are universal concepts of universal truths and moralities. Even if they're not existing yet, we can create them, and therefore they are absolute. This is what Ma'at and God represents. It's the good. That's what Nefer represents, was the good. That's what the Logos represents, was the good. That's what the form of the good was for Plato, was the good. That's what God is equated to all that. It's all from our consciousness, idealized as a universal and as an absolute. But this is all from our consciousness in idealized universal concepts of what we should aspire towards. So we aspire to Ma'at, and we be and live Ma'a. So we have our Ka choosing which way we go. And it'll determine our Ka Ma'at, our Ka Ma'a, whether we're being and living true or false, authentic or inauthentic, according to our arms and our hands, what we choose to do. That's our actions, our behaviors, and our deeds. The Ka, the power, the energy, the life, our spirit, essence, nature, and character. So you want to create a better life? You want to go to an eternal life, an afterlife, a heaven, a paradisical life? Well, use your arms and hands to choose to do things that are more in alignment with Ma'at, with truth and order, the ideal universal absolute that we should aspire to and be and live by. Infographic number 8 is a collage I've already done in a previous presentation. So we just have, just to show the symbolism of the scales and Ma'at, and how that relates to the sword of truth and the sword that is eternally and vigilantly against falsity, good that's against evil. This is why the scales aren't about balancing good and evil, right and wrong. It's about knowing the difference between right and wrong and living according to what is right, so that you balance yourself, equilibrium, in reciprocity according to what is right. And if you don't, well, then the reciprocity is, if you do harm, you'll get harm back, usually. If whoever's harmed is willing to reciprocate, then you'll get harm back. And if no one does anything, then nothing's ever going to happen to you. Which is why karma and the whole past life, future life is all bullshit. Because if no one does anything, nothing will happen to you. I've already explained how natural moral law is not a force unto itself. It comes from us, from humans. Morality comes from human consciousness, from higher order consciousness. And without the higher order consciousness of humans or other beings of higher order consciousness capable of knowing morality and righting wrongs according to morality, then there would be no wrongs righted according to morality, because there would be no higher order consciousness to right those wrongs. Morality is completely from within higher order consciousness. It comes from us, from within us. It does not come outside of us. It's not out there. It's not an externalized force, just like the soul is not an externalized force. It doesn't come from out there. So we need to align ourselves with the truth. And that's how we live morally, is by living according to the truth, or failing to live up to that truth of Ma'at, and that's how you get your Ka Ma'at. Your Ka of living up to Ma'at, or your Ka of not living up to Ma'at, is your karma. And if someone else wants to reciprocate a harm that you did to them, they want to reciprocate back to you so that you feel what you did, well, then they have the right to do that. That's karma. That's reciprocity. That's balance. And if they choose to have mercy and not do it back to you, well, then guess what? You're not going to feel any consequences for your actions. Other than, well, then they won't be your friend, so you lost a friend or whatever, but you're not going to feel the same amount of pain. You're not going to be fined or whatever. If they don't do anything against you, then there's nothing going to be done against you. The universe isn't going to do anything against you. It's not going to come back in a future life. It's not being punished for a past life. People really need to understand cause and effect and how it really works. Is that everyone is here based on everyone that has come before them. So everyone that's come before us is all our past lives. Past lives of people before us have created where we are now, and we are now facing the consequences of what people before us have created. And what we create now will create consequences for people in the future and what they will have to live and deal with. So the oil problem, the planetary problem, the energy problem, pollution problem, it's all people before us who didn't care to do things right and just consume, 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 and that leads to where we are now. And if we don't fix it, well, then it's going to be up to someone else in the future to fix it. And if no one fixes it, well, then it's just going to lead to our own self-destruction. So yeah, I got to pick up the mistake of my past life, of everyone that came before me, billions of people that came before me, they're all my past life that I have to fix what they did. And you have to fix what they did. And everyone that comes after me is going to have to fix what I didn't do right, that I allowed to perpetuate on this earth, the evil and the injustice that's allowed to continue because I didn't stop it, or because I created it, or whoever created it before and I didn't stop it now and it's allowed to perpetuate. That's how karma works. That's how cause and effect works. So that's what Lady Justice is. Ma'at, Themis, Dyke, Metis, Wisdom, Justice, Scales, Sword of Truth, Battling Falsity, Good and Evil. Same symbolism. Infographic number 8. So here, I'm getting into the karma and dharma and rota, relating to karma and how that relates to the Tao and the Tao, all the other concepts that I was relating to Ma'at earlier on, morality. It all has to do, all the ancient wisdom, all the ancient traditions, all have to do with morality. This is what the ancient wisdom is about. It's not about Anunnaki and aliens and the greys and the reptilians and the demiurge and the archons and... No. All the ancient knowledge is not about all of this. It's about how to live in life here, not in speculative lives, other places and other dimensions, and how this place is all a fantasy. Bullshit. It's all about truth and morality right here and now, in this life that you live here and now, because this is reality, not some other place that you will want to imagine is an absolute reality, and this place is just a virtual reality. You know how I'm going to create a heaven on earth and a paradise on earth? Is by me living more morally and teaching other people to live more morally. It has nothing to do with archons, demiurges, reptilians, or greys, or fifth dimensions, or whatever else you want to believe in. It has nothing to do with any of that. Alright, so the wheel, as I mentioned in the previous presentations, the wheel of life, the wheel of time, the wheel is the rota, the rotation, the wheel of life, the rotation of life, of time, of destiny, of fate, of fortune, of dharma, of karma. It's all about life and how we create into life in order to get what we put out. We put it out, we're going to get it back. Essentially, that's the way it works. Not that, oh, you murder someone and no one knows about it. Well, no one's going to pay you back. You're not going to be righted your wrong if no one knows that you did wrong. It's not the way it works. It's not an intangible force that's, oh, look at that, I'm a force that, oh, this person did wrong. La la la, let me go get them back. Ha ha ha, I'm going to reciprocate back to them their evil deeds. I'm going to put them back. I'm going to get this person to kill them. Ha ha ha. Oh, I'm going to wait till their next life. I'm going to get them there. That's not how it works. It's forces. I put out a force into the universe, which interacts with other causal forces in the universe, and some of them can come back on me. If you fill a pail with water and everyone keeps filling the pail, eventually the pail is going to overflow. So did I cause the pail to overflow? No, but I added one drop in and it caused an effect, and eventually there's a resulting manifestation. So if we all poison the planet, eventually the planet blows up or whatever. Well, that's not because some force made it blow up. That's because we put forces out into the universe which polluted our environment, which destroyed ourselves. It's not some magical force doing it. It's not some magical Gaia, ooh, consciousness, ooh, look at me, I'm Gaia. It's all in your head. We do it all to ourselves. We do. But it doesn't mean everything we do is going to come back upon us. In the moral sphere, not cause and effect. There's cause and effect, polluting the environment. It's going to come back on us because it's output into the environment coming back. But in a moral sphere, that's only with behavior of higher order consciousness or beings of capable of having consciousness that can understand pain and pleasure and reciprocate it. Do you want to punch a bear in the face and they claw your face back? Well, that is cause and effect, but not just a cause and effect in reality. It's a cause and effect related to morality. Anyways, I've talked about this before and I keep going off on side tangents because people still don't understand it properly. So these are wheel symbolism, okay? Swastika or whatever, reverse swastika from Tibet. You got the dowel. You got the wheel with the 8 spokes, the 4 spokes, the 6 spokes. You got the 8-spoked swastika. You got the Wheel of Fortune. You got another tarot card, which we'll see in the next slide. The World, which is another wheel in the 4 elements. So the 4 elements, the 4 spokes, the 8 spokes. The 4 to the 8 is just doubled. You got Sumer, Sumeria on top. You got Tibet. You got Babylon, the sun wheel. It's just in the middle here with the black, white, red, and yellow. That's the Hopi, I think. Medicine wheel. Anyways, the wheel. The wheel is an important symbol. I've already talked about it in other presentations a bit. This one is going to be a little bit more in-depth. So I talked about the Ru and the mouth and that symbolism, the Tauru, the Taurus. So this is going to relate to that a bit. Infographic number 9. So more with the roundness. This deals with the cycle and the path and the way and an order as the order. Ma'at as the order, the cosmic underlying order, the universal law, morality. Well, all the wheel symbolism deals with a cycle and a path and a way going round and round. This is what this does too. The Ouroboros, the snake, the Tower of World card, round and round and round again with the Tower of World card, the four elements just as the Wheel of Fortune, the Wheel of Fate, the Wheel of Karma, Destiny, Dharma. All the same thing. It's about how we create in the world. We output forces and then we are input with forces. We're outputting into reality to affect reality, and reality is affecting us and inputting into us in order to output again, and round it goes. So here you have that round and round symbolism of the Ouroboros, of the infinity sign, the snake and the dragon, because the snake has to do with bending, and the wheel, quell the wheel, and bending the snake, related in etymology. So, and the Tao, the two, again, dual, and it goes round and round, and it reciprocates. It all has to do with reciprocity, balance, round and round, generating in reality, reality affecting us, us affecting reality, relating to, so the circle derived, the circle symbolism responsible for, related to the O, the letter O and the number 0, and that symbolism relating to O and the womb and the gate and the mouth and creation and generation, That's what was going around and round in the beginning and the end, and the infinity symbol all relates to the same symbolism. And the letter R, the letter O, the source for the letter O, is from the Ru in Egypt, which had the mouth shape or twisted 90 degrees. It's the vesica piscis of the womb, and also it's the shape used for the eye with a dot in it. So it's a very foundational symbol, either as an O itself or as a vesica piscis shape. It's the same representation as that shape of the vesica piscis with the mouth became the letter O in our modern language. And that letter O, the circle again, all relates to the mouth, the gate, the womb, birthing, all that symbolism. Infographic number 10. This one was already done in the previous presentation. It's just to tie in the Ouroboros and the cyclical aspect, and also the wheel of time and the eight spokes. Well, the eight is an infinity sign, and infinity deals with time, and the X and the times in math, the time sign, 1 times 1 equals 1, 2 times 2 equals 4. So X is times, and it's also in the infinity sign, so the times sign in math is also in other symbolism, as the X is there. So if you take the X and you put two lines on it, it gives you the infinity symbol. So just concepts of Ouroboros, infinity, cause and effect, reciprocity, and that's what the wheel symbolism, everything with the circle relates to this in some way. Infographic 11. So in dealing with the wheel symbolism, we have a lot of words that are related. We have wheel, cycle, circle, circus, rotation, the chakra, order, the cosmic, the universe, Ouroboros, infinity, the X, the cross, the elements, generation and life. So all this symbolism I've been talking about is all related. It just takes a long time to present it all in different parts. So with the wheel, a rotation, there's this concept called rota. When you're looking into Ma'at, you have this arta, rota concept and dharma relating to morality and the way to live life. It's all related to the same things. This is all the deep foundational wisdom of how to live life and how to generate life. So arta is the cosmic order, the universal law that establishes good arrangement, just like Ma'at. And dharma is behavior in accord, alignment, harmony, and unity with arta, rota. Dharma is the duties, rights, laws, conduct, virtues, the right way of living. Again, we're talking about the same thing. Just as the Neter Ma'at, which was with perfect justice and the goodness, Ma'at and Dharma, the right way of living, and the Seba, Sebayat, and the teachings of a right way of living, teachings of wisdom, instructions on how to live. It's all these wisdom teachings. This is the real wisdom of life, how to act properly, because that's what wisdom is right action. So all wisdom and understanding, knowledge and understanding, is to provide us with the wisdom to act properly in the world. So the Dharma, again, in Jainism and Buddhism, other concepts of Dharma, relates to purification, moral transformation, and the path of righteousness, which is, again, what Ma'at is, righteousness. So there's arta, rota, rotation, rotary, which comes from the Proto-Indo-European ret, and it means to run or roll, and we have, it relates to the car and the chariot, as I believe it's the rota and chariot are related, and car, rotation, that's why I have it there. And the wheel and the car and the chariot, to make things move and go forward. That's what this is all about, is going forward in life, going forward in time, in fate, in destiny, in fortune. That's why the astrology, zodiac, all that information and how it's all supposed to be dealing with your fate and your fortune and your destiny. Well, yes, it does. If you understand what fate, fortune, and destiny really is, it's about progressing forward in time and how that's based on our actions, which lead us forward in time based on where we are now to where we're going to be. So what will happen to us and what will result is based on what we are doing now and what we've done before, which will produce what will happen next. And that's karma. The Vedic Artha is Sanskrit Artam, that which is properly joined, order, rule, or truth. They say it all relates to Ma'at as a foundation. Or at least truth and morality as a foundational conceptual framework that other people attribute different names to, Ma'at, Artha, Moira, whatever, different places. So karma, karman, and kama, all these three words are the same. They're in Wikipedia. And it has to do with to do, make, perform, accomplish, cause, effect, prepare, or undertake. And the root kr, K-R, as in Cree, as in the word Sanskrit, to imply a language that is well made. So Sanskrit implies a language that is well made, and also a language of the gods, just as the Egyptian was the Metu Neter, which symbols of the gods, symbols of representations of the gods, symbols of representations of consciousness, as consciousness is the generator, creator, as the god. But then that's also the god of the origin of the universe. So that's the whole play is how we're creators of our reality, but there's also the original one source, conceptual, first cause, unmovable mover, generator of reality that we live in that existed before we were here. And that's also why we are then equated with God, and then we are God, and